This is The Week in Review, and we have lots to talk about this hour, from the federal government snooping into our phone records and internet use, to our state government making some big changes to education, taxes, and more in the proposed state budget. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's good to have you with us on this Friday, June 7th. We have with us two guests from different political viewpoints to debate and discuss the top stories in the news this week, and we welcome your input, too. What happened this week that you would like them to discuss? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. We have with us Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator from La Crosse and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Kathleen Falk is with us, former Dane County executive. She was a delegate to the 2012 Democratic National Convention. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Dan, Joy, and our listeners.
It's good to have you both with us. We do have lots to talk about with the proposed state budget now in the hands of the full assembly. The Joint Finance Committee held an all-nighter this week, and early in the morning, on Thursday morning, passed the state budget. Dan Kopanky, let's just start with you. A general question. Is this a budget that you generally support?
Generally, I would. For the following reasons, the tax cut of $651 million, property taxes being held to 1% or less, increasing public funding for our education. They're looking at taxes for the relief for Milwaukee, city of Milwaukee people, so residents. So I think, you know, there's obviously some controversial parts of it. For some people, the voucher system, Medicaid expansion, but overall, it's a good budget that I would support.
And Kathleen Falk, do you think it's a good budget?
No, and I don't think it reflects the values of Wisconsin citizens. You know, a budget's the most important document that shows what your priorities are. And this budget shows that our priorities are a $650 million income tax cut that mostly goes to people making over $100,000 a year at the cost of public education for about 900,000 kids. That's not Wisconsin's priorities.
Dan?
Well, obviously, and good morning, Kathleen. It's great to be on with you again. Again, if you look at previous budgets, maybe the previous four or five budgets, and the fiscal situation that was at that time in place, we are miles away from where we were in 2011, 2009, 2007. We were having much difficulty balancing our budget. We had to raise taxes. Here we're looking at stealing funds, again, from all of these different areas, including the transportation fund, students' auxiliary funds, and UW system. I could go on and on about the difficulties in balancing the budget in previous budget cycles. But this one, we're looking at a $651 million tax decrease. We have exceeded projections of revenue coming into Madison by $1 billion, more than $1 billion. Again, this is a very different situation and a very positive situation for the residents of the state of Wisconsin.
Well, let's look at some context here. And again, I'm for an income tax cut just like anybody else would, but at what cost? What's happened in this budget is a major statewide expansion of private school vouchers, and the dollars are big, about $768 per K through 8 child, and about $1,400 per high school child, which totals not only tens of millions of dollars, but it means that we're creating two parallel school systems, one for almost 900,000 kids for whom has been cut in the last couple of budgets, and one for 100,000 kids for whom they will not only have this extra income per pupil, but then there is now a new tax deduction created at a cost of $30 million to all of us for those parents of those children. You know, it'd be one thing if the private school voucher program, now 25 years after it began, showed that it improved schools for our kids. But the data doesn't show that. And so when you think about what's at stake here for our future and investing, the most important thing we can do is invest in our kids. This budget makes the wrong choice.
Yeah. So why is this a good thing for Wisconsin to expand the private school voucher program statewide, Dan Kopanky?
Well, again, in my opinion, it's all about the student and the parents of that respective student. And if they are giving choices which they feel is going to improve the outlook, improve the prospects of success for an individual student, then I'm in favor of that. And the expansion here is measured. It's capped. We're taking a look at it. We're on a statewide basis to see how it's going to work out statewide. And, you know, in the private sector, if we look at businesses and competition for businesses, what it generally does is make an existing business better when competition moves in. And I think that's going to be the result here. Our public schools are going to continue to get better because there's competition out here, and students and parents have a choice that may benefit them in the long run.
But, Dan, your point is well taken that this has now created an unfair playing field. It's not adding competition. It's just created an unfair playing field by providing, you know, about $1,000 more for children that go to private schools instead of $150 more for the 870,000 kids to go to public schools. That's creating an unfair playing.
Again, if you look at previous budgets, previous years, if you look at the surrounding states, our per pupil expense for education has been higher than our surrounding neighbors all for a long, long time, except for Illinois. And excuse me. And we all know the fiscal problems that Illinois is facing, not because of that necessarily, but overall. But they're still spending more than we are. But again, I think we've been fair as far as is where we're spending our dollars for education.
Well, you know, Senator Dale Schultz, Republican State Senator Dale Schultz, says that this private school voucher program is a dangerous path that will lead to a parallel school district funding system in the state. He is calling for changes to this voucher school deal. He's concerned that there will be a lot of pressure to loosen the enrollment caps that have been placed at after next year, which have been placed at 1,000 students. Do you see, Dan Kopanky, any possibility that this program will be changed?
Well, it could be. Again, there's a measured increase here. It could expand more in future years, of course, but it also could be retracted in future years, depending on the results and the perception and reality of the parents out here in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen?
Well, that's my point, that the results haven't showed an improvement in the results of both the private school kids and the public school kids. So we've had 25 years now of this experiment, and the data shows it hasn't improved schools.
Well, again, to answer that is why is there demand for this? Why is there demand for this? Why is there pressure coming from parents for this to happen?
Well, my voice here is for the 870,000 kids who have to depend on the public school system for their futures and our futures, and to not invest in them and create new tax deductions and an unfair, very large subsidy for those children whose parents do choose to send them to a different school is unfair and unwise in what we need to invest in for our future.
Now, we talked about the income tax cut that's in this state budget, the expansion of private school vouchers in the state budget. Kathleen Falk, is there anything else that's in this state budget that you think is not the way Wisconsin should go?
The rejection of the federal Medicaid money. You know, here the federal government has on the plate for us to take $150 million, which would get another about 85,000 people, who, by the way, are making about $15,000 a year, some decent health care. And why would we reject that it's just simply defies common sense. The argument that Governor Walker and the legislative leaders have given is because they can't count on federal money being there in the future. But that argument exists across the board for many programs for which the governor and legislative leaders take money. For example, road money, airport money, education money, money for putting police on the streets, money for kids with developmental disabilities, money for sexual assault. We get federal money for all those programs and more. And yet we don't reject that federal money under the worry that it won't be there next year.
Was the rejection of that federal Medicaid money the right decision, Dan Kopanky?
I agree with that decision. And Wisconsin's not alone. We're not the only state rejecting these funds. I think there's 22 or 23. I'm not sure. Somewhere's in there. And to reject this federal money, again, quite frankly, the federal government does not have this money. There is big trouble on the horizon with a $16-8 trillion debt right now, and that's going to rise certainly with the cost of Obamacare. And so I think what the governor is trying to do and the legislature is trying to do here is to be fiscally responsible in the long run to the residents of the state of Wisconsin.
You know, we talked with Senator Dale Schultz yesterday morning on this show, and he said that he thinks Wisconsin's priorities are out of whack. Let's take a listen.
When we suddenly find ourselves in a situation where, you know, we can define poverty for a family of four for private and school vouchers at $70,000 plus a year, but a family of four making $24,000 a year is too wealthy for Medicaid, there's something wrong with our priorities, and I just feel we have become way too extreme.
Have we become way too extreme, Dan Kopanky?
No, I don't think so. And again, when you compare the state of Wisconsin with so many other states, as far as funding for Medicaid, last budget we put $1.2 billion into that fund, and under very, very difficult financial times for Wisconsin, we did that. Historically, a percentage of our residents that have had some kind of medical coverage has always been near the top of all of the 50 states. So I'm not so sure that, again, our priorities are out of whack. But because we have taken care of our people as best we can, even in very, very difficult times.
Many other Republican governors across the country are accepting this federal Medicaid money so that tens of thousands of more people will get some basic health care. So you just have to, again, question why Governor Walker is so steadfast in his refusal to provide that coverage here for citizens. And, you know, perhaps it's because he appears to be running for president and has a different agenda and a different constituency now, and that's not Wisconsin citizens.
I'm wondering, Kathleen Falk, if you were surprised to hear State Senator Dale Schultz harsh criticism of this budget that was passed by the Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee.
I think he is an example of a Republican legislator from whose party has just gone so far to the right that he is speaking out. And there are other examples, you know, in the budget bill, I mean, the cuts in the stewardship fund. That's a program that has had bipartisan support for decades, you know, and it's something we love no matter what part of the state, no matter what your political aspirations or party is. And so it's just, again, another example of a budget not reflecting, I think, shared common values of us citizens.
Yeah. Dan Kopanky, you know Senator Schultz. What do you make of his comments?
Well, Senator Schultz has been in the legislature a long time. And he's very independent, as we all know, and he has a right to his comments. It doesn't mean we have to all agree, and it doesn't mean necessarily that every one of his comments is right on. So he's a personal friend of mine for many, many years, and he certainly has this right to speak out. Speaking of stewardship funds, how many thousand acres does the state of Wisconsin already own? And we're taking these acres and this territory out of tax base, which is hurting us, and we're funding, some people want more money, Kathleen mentioned that, into this fund to buy more land and take away the tax base. And I'm just, I when is enough enough of buying land and putting it in the public roles instead of on the private sector where it can be taxed? So I'm in favor of that. It's a great program. It's been a great program for a long, long time. But I think, again, we're trying to be fiscally responsible here. Wisconsin stands out. Again, when you compare us to the other 50 states as to where we stand with our budget, where we stand with our pension fund and the funding of that, we're trying to be responsible here to the citizens of this state, and I think we are, and we have to do that in a responsible manner.
Let me take a quick break. We'll continue talking about the state budget. We'll move along to some other top national stories as well as we are reviewing the news of the week with Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator from La Crosse, and Kathleen Falk, former Dane County executive. 1-800-642-1234 is our number if you'd like to join in with a comment on the news of the week or a topic that you would like to bring up. You can also email us, talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Monday at 7 o'clock, we will be talking with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson for the full hour of our state capitol report. We'll recap the latest action regarding the state budget. We'll talk some about this weekend's Democratic convention and more news from the state capitol. That's Monday between 7 and 8. We are reviewing what happened at the state capitol during this part of our Week in Review with Kathleen Falk and Dan Kopanky. And with you, we'll take some calls. Darren in Viroqua is with us. Hi, Darren.
Hi, good morning. Good morning to my friend, former state senator Dan Kopanky.
Hi, Darren. How are you?
Hi, great.
Good.
And good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning.
I disagree with Kathleen on this issue of expanding school voucher, and it comes down to a philosophical difference. Who owns our children? Does the state own the children? Does it take a village to raise our children? And I fundamentally believe, as our founding fathers did, that it's the job of the parents to educate the children. The public schools don't own our children. So as a member, as somebody who goes to Wells Lutheran Church, for instance, I truly believe, and we have a school, that it is important to expand options for children to go to religious schools. Fundamentally disagree with what is taught in public schools.
Darren, thank you. I, because we need to get to many different issues, he says that that taxpayer vouchers should be used so he can and others can send their children to private and including religious schools.
Well, I certainly wholly respect his choice of whether he wants to send his children to a private school, but it shouldn't be based on public tax dollars. Public tax dollars should go to public schools.
Yeah. You want to respond, Dan?
Well, obviously, Darren and I are pretty much in agreement on the voucher system. Again, it's measured. It gives the parents choice, and he is right about who owns these kids, and they have a right to have options as far as educating their kids, and I think we need to certainly sustain that option.
Yeah, well, we had a caller who just dropped off. I was going to go to him, and I think Dan Kopanky, he was referring his comment to you. He said, what if somebody wanted to start up a Muslim school? Would you be okay if public dollars went to send kids to that?
Well, let's just wait and see if that happens and see what happens within the people of the state of Wisconsin and what the lawmakers do with that. Is it going to happen? Let's wait and see. And then we'll see how people in Wisconsin and how the legislature and the governor would react to that.
Under the law, private school is a private school,
mm-hmm.
Dan. So this would be allowed under the private school voucher program. And that, again, shouldn't be the issue of whose religion you agree with or not. That's why we have a separation of public dollars and church and state.
Well, let's move on to another issue. The Center for Investigative Journalism, which has offices here in Vilas Hall on the UW-Madison campus, the university pays for utilities and internet access, but the center hires UW students as paid interns and provides some academic and journalism support. Well, now the Joint Finance Committee has voted to force them to move off campus and told the UW that it cannot have any of its staff working with the Center for Investigative Journalism, which is not funded by taxpayer dollars. Kathleen Faulks, should the Center for Investigative Journalism be allowed to operate on campus with campus support?
Sure. You know, I was an elected official like Dan, and I'm thinking Dan and I might agree on this one, where we've certainly taken our share of lumps from stories over the years. But to put this provision in the budget bill, it just looks so thin-skinned. You know, you just got to be a little tougher. If we don't have a free press and to not only monitor and report and put sunshine on government and the rest of our community, then we will have a hard time in a democracy. It's pretty fundamental. And I also find you'd have to chuckle that here Charlie Sykes and us are agreeing on the same point. So I hope that they reconsider this.
Now, do you think they will or should reconsider this, Dan Kopanky?
I think it will be. I'm just not sure the reason for it. I haven't been able to dig deep enough to find out what Senator Darling and Representative Nygren had in mind by doing this. So hopefully that information will come out and we can make a more educated decision on it.
Yeah, I saw in Sean Johnson's story on this that some of the legislative leaders were saying that they believe in a separation of state and press. How about that for the reason? But anyway, then somebody said, what about Wisconsin Public Television and Wisconsin Public Radio? and that was considered a different situation. But in any case, you'd like a little more information as to the reasoning behind the move that was put in the state budget?
Correct.
Yeah. What about the item that was put in the state budget that some people were surprised to see? The legalization of bounty hunters in some counties in Wisconsin. Dan Kopanky, does that seem like a wise move?
Well, in looking at this, there are a couple positives here that I see. First off, it's kind of like a pilot program. It's restricted to, I believe, 5 counties. Many of the other states, I think there's only 2 or 3 that do not have this. So let's take a look at it. If we're going to do it on a pilot program project here and look at it after, we have some experience and see how it works out. If it is, maybe we expand it statewide. And if it isn't, we cut it off.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen?
Law enforcement opposes this because they're afraid it'll be abused. So we will see in this pilot.
Yeah, it will start in 5 counties, according to this proposal, Dane, Kenosha, Milwaukee, Racine, and Waukesha, before expanding statewide after 5 years.
This is, I think it was the last budget, was it not, that Governor Walker vetoed this part of it, similar? So, maybe it won't stand the veto pen.
Mm, okay, let's take some calls. Mark in Marshfield is with us. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call. I just wanted to say that I was there the other night when the Joint Finance Committee passed this piece of legislation on to the regular legislature. And, for the first, that was the first committee meeting I'd ever been to at the state legislature. And I got to tell you, I have never experienced a more arrogant group of individuals in my entire life. At 3 o'clock, they adjourned and didn't come back until 1 o'clock. And when somebody suggested that they do this in the light of day, they just rammed it through best they could. To me, that was just a really disgusting display to the public of Wisconsin about how we're going to deal with legislative matters. And my second point is simply that Dan keeps talking about how Wisconsin, has done well in the past. We've provided good services for Medicaid. We've provided good education. Well, since when have the people of Wisconsin indicated that they want to be average?
All right. Thank you, Mark. Let me though, first get Dan Kopanky to respond to this all-nighter. Was this the way to pass a budget?
Well, first off, to respond to the other average statement, I've never indicated that Wisconsin's average. In fact, of the matter is, I've indicated that I think we're head and shoulders above many, many, many of the other states in comparison. But I will agree with Mark on this late night. I never, ever liked the idea that we'd stay out in session all night or we'd be working at 3 a.m. in the morning. Even in the private sector business world, good decisions aren't made with an all-night session, 12 hours. People go home, get some sleep, and in the morning, whether it be 6 a.m. or 7 a.m., people are fresh and can make really, really good decisions. And I don't mean to insinuate that the joint finance made bad decisions at 3 a.m., but I just think for the public, as Mark indicated, it would just seem more appropriate that we do this stuff in the light of day, and I've always been in favor of that.
Kathleen?
Well, I agree with Dan and Mark, and I have even more concerns because after the vote was taken in the wee hours of the morning, the legislative leaders then also have said that there will be no changes when it gets to the Assembly or Senate floors, and that's even more disturbing. You know, people elect 132 legislators to go and represent them and do a job in those houses, and so they will expect there to be changes to reflect their will. And so I think that's even more concerning.
We need to move on to a number of other issues, but I wanted both of you to comment on this particular budget and whether it's going to be good for Wisconsin's economy. There was a report out this week that said Wisconsin is going to be 49th in the country for economic growth and for this economic recovery. Dan Kopanky, is this budget going to be good for the economy of Wisconsin?
I do believe so, and it's all about job creation and fiscal responsibility in the state capitals, and I think we're showing that, and certainly we have a long ways to go as far as job growth in the state. However, I think it's interesting to note, again, that I previously had mentioned revenues increased over $1 billion over what had been projected earlier. And that means the main source of revenue in Wisconsin is income tax and sales tax. So there's got to be some activity out here that people didn't count on because we have this excess over projection funds coming in. So I think that's a very positive message. Another positive message is, again, the lowering of the tax brackets for income tax. Very early on when I was in the state senate, I met with a group of business leaders, and I asked them the question, what is the number one obstacle to economic growth, job growth, companies coming in to Wisconsin? And they said income tax, which kind of surprised me. But when you think about it, people look to go where, in fact, it's not going to affect them personally as much as other states. So I think, again, we've sent positive messages to the business world community here that we're fiscally responsible. We're going to improve the climate for job growth here in Wisconsin.
Before you respond, Kathleen Falka, the report was from the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. It ranked Wisconsin 49th in the nation for economic growth. Governor Walker says the report is of concern, but he also says it should be noted that this index relies heavily on the state's monthly employment report, which can change significantly. Your response to that report?
Well, the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia's report is very well respected and regarded. And so the fact that here we are, you know, after Governor Walker and the Republican legislature had their first budget 2 years ago, you ought to have seen improvements in Wisconsin standing if their agenda was good for the economy. And in fact, we haven't, as this report just shows. You know, it'd be one thing if their agenda of not investing in public schools or not taking the federal Medicaid aid, et cetera, had some good payoff for the state as a whole, like an improved economy. But these data show that it hasn't. And so we have the worst of all worlds, you know, the wrong priorities in spending that aren't producing a better result for our state.
Don in La Crosse is with us next. Hello, Don.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, go ahead, Don. What's your comment?
Well, my comment is it seems to me that everything that the governor does and some of the Republican representatives in the state is done for the Republicans. They don't really care about the poor. They don't care about the old. They don't care about the young and poor. They care about taking over the state. They they want to take over the country.
All right. Your response to that, Dan Kopanky?
Well, obviously, I disagree. Again, I mentioned previously in a very, very difficult times in the last budget, we put $1.2 billion into Medicaid to expand that and cover that. We have a history, again, in Wisconsin of treating our people very, very well as far as Medicaid, Medicare from the feds, and private. We've always been at 90% or more of the residents for a long, long time. We've been at that rate. Residents have had some kind of coverage. So we have taken care. And again, I mentioned earlier, per pupil, we look very good relative to Minnesota, relative to Iowa, as far as spending money for our education, public education. Our infrastructure is certainly needs some repair, but again, that's because of fiscal irresponsibility over the previous 10 years where we've taken money out of the transportation budget repeatedly. But even then, if you drive to some of the other states, we don't look that bad. So we're doing the best we can under the circumstances. Wisconsin can be and is, I think, a shining light in many respects relative to the other states.
Kathleen?
Well, you know, I don't cast aspersions on the hearts and souls of individuals making these decisions. But I do say that the impact of this budget that is harsh on the 900,000 school kids in our state or the 85,000 people for whom we'll not have some basic health care. Those choices impact real people and are real hardships and real human beings. And that is why I think that this state budget is out of sync with what a majority of Wisconsin citizens want for themselves and their neighbors.
Kathleen Falk is the former Dane County Executive. She was a delegate to the 2012 Democratic National Convention. And Dan Kopanky is a former Republican State Senator from La Crosse and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. They are our two guests for this edition of the Week in Review. We'll talk about other top stories in state and national government coming up in just a bit. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for the Week in Review quiz. We talked 3 weeks ago about U.S. Representative Gwen Moore's appearance on comedian Stephen Colbert's show. This week, another politician from Wisconsin subjected himself to a bit of well-intentioned ridicule on the Colbert Report. Who was it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Which Wisconsin politician appeared on the Colbert Report this week? We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and you will receive your choice of books that we featured on the program recently. So 5 minutes or so to call in or email in your answer. We'll announce the answer and the winner at the end of the program. I'm Joy Cardine with Kathleen Falk and Dan Kopanky. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll come back to state issues in just a bit, but let's shift gears now to some national stories. The Director of National Intelligence is trying to set the record straight after some leaked documents revealed information about two top secret intelligence gathering programs. James Clapper says the disclosure of an internet surveillance program is reprehensible and could cause big-time harm to the nation's ability to respond to threats. He also says some information that came out about the phone records is not true, so he is declassifying more information because he says Americans must understand the limits of the program. So the federal government is looking into phone records and internet sites that some of us are visiting. Kathleen Falk, Are you disturbed by this?
Well, I think we're going to hear some more information now that some of the more documents are being declassified. But apparently there has been some surveillance for the last 7 or so years begun under President Bush and continued under President Obama that, you know, is court approved and approved by both the Senate and House intelligence oversight committees. So, it appears that the process that has been used here is the one that is constitutionally required. And I will look forward to seeing what other information we get about it in the next couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Dan Kopanky, your reaction to this news?
Yeah, I think they have some real explaining to do in the wake of the IRS issue. People in the United States are becoming very concerned as to the reach of the federal government into our private lives. When I'm agreeing with former Vice President Al Gore, boy, you know that there's an issue here.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Dan Kopanky and Kathleen Falk on this edition of our Week in Review. If you have an issue that you'd like them to discuss, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm wondering, Dan Kopanky, your thoughts on whether or not there should be DNA collection in the state of Wisconsin for anyone arrested on suspicion of a felony. Right now it's, I believe, just on conviction, and this would expand it to upon arrest. Do you think that's a good idea?
I do not think that's a good idea. I think that, again, that gives more power to the government into our lives, and I just am totally opposed to that.
Kathleen Falk?
I don't oppose it for some purposes, and this is it's a tough issue given, you know, that both the far right and far left have the same concerns. And I think we just saw that reflected in the justices of the Supreme Court when they issued a decision, I think, last week upholding some use of DNA.
Yeah. Let's also talk about President Obama naming Susan Rice as his national security advisor. Dan Kopanky, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, she's obviously a very controversial figure based on the 5 talk shows on the Sunday following the Benghazi incident. And I think he could have made a better choice. I just feel that she's so controversial, and this is just adding to the mix. And, very unfortunate what happened over there, but we're trying to get to the bottom of it yet, what really happened, and who knew what and when, and who made some decisions to stand off. A very, very horrific situation over there that happened, and I just think that he could have made a better choice.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen Falk?
I think she's an outstanding public servant and extremely well qualified, and she will do a good job for our nation.
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has appointed the state's attorney general to temporarily fill the U.S. Senate seat that opened up with the death of Frank Lautenberg this week. Christie says that Chiesa is not planning on seeking the office in October when there will be a special election. The situation has put Christie in an interesting position. Democrats didn't want another Republican appointed, but many Republicans are upset with Christie for not being conservative enough. Is Chris Christie doing the Republican Party any favors, Dan Kopanky?
Well, at least he appointed a Republican to fill it temporarily, so I think that's a positive. And then I think they've set an election for October. I think it's fine.
Well, it was a Democrat that's being replaced, and so I think that's why crying foul here is appropriate.
Well, yeah, but you really wouldn't expect a Republican governor to appoint a Democrat to a position like that, would you?
Well, that's who the citizens had picked, though.
They'll have a choice in October.
But not till then.
All right. So let's see what else happened nationally this week. There was a summit of sort on mental illness, and President Obama was calling for an end to mental illness stigma, and Vice President Joe Biden says that educators should learn more to recognize mental illness. Kathleen Falk, any thoughts on this this focus on mental illness, especially when it comes to gun violence?
Oh, it's just so tragic, and you know we just see it in our communities so constantly, where there's much to be gained by trying to help people understand that mental illness is an illness, and that we can do things to help people with mental illness, and our programs try to keep people in the community, in our families here with us, but there's a lot of stigma that's associated with it and a lot of judgment calls in order to keep both individuals safe and the community safe.
Mm-hmm. Dan Kopanky?
Yeah, I think this is a very good initiative. When I was in the state Senate, I worked with people, you know, concerned with mental illness, and I think it's necessary, and it's a good thing.
Well, let's. There are some other state issues that that we can talk about still. And in fact, I'm going to go to a caller. Louise in Egg Harbor is going to bring up the next topic. Hello, Louise.
Hello, Joy. Thank you for taking my call. I had read this week that there was a proposal, perhaps coming down the pike, from a couple of legislatures that would require pregnant women wishing an abortion to receive an ultrasound before the procedure would be okayed. And I would like your guest comment. My feeling is that this is an intrusion. It is... It requires a woman to partially undress and have jelly applied to her abdomen. This does not seem to be the role of government to me, and I would like their comments.
Kathleen Falk?
Yes, I agree with the caller, and I think it's another example of how far the Republican Party is moving away from where I think people like Dale Schultz and others have traditionally been, and why it's so out of sync with Wisconsin values. You know, these are public health decisions that should be made in the privacy by a woman with her partner, with her doctor, with her religious beliefs, and not by politicians.
Mm-hmm. Dan Kopanky?
Well, I'm a longtime pro-life person, and we're dealing with a life here, and it requires a woman to seek an abortion to have the option of seeing her unborn child via ultrasound. Again, I life is precious, and if we can save a life because of this, I'm for it. I don't think it's unnecessary. This is serious stuff that's taking place here when we do an abortion. We're dealing with life and death issues, and I think this is okay.
All right, let's talk about another state news story this week. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says he wants to hurry up on passing Republican Representative Jeff Stone's election reform bill, which includes a new photo ID requirement. The Government Accountability Board and many Democrats are urging Voss to slow down. Is this something that really needs to be on the fast track, Dan Kopanky?
I'm not sure. You know, we passed a bill a while back that's being held up as far as ID is concerned. If we do it right, I'm okay with it coming by June 30th. But if it's not fully vetted, then I think we should take our time and let's get it right and do it right. So I think, again, I'm not real close to that scene. And as far as whether they've looked at all the different options and conditions of such a bill, but if they have and they're ready to go, then they should go. And if they're not, where it's going to be held up again down the road, I think that they should take their time and get it right.
Yeah, this new photo ID requirement is different than the law that's currently tied up in the courts, in that it would allow someone to say, I was unable to obtain a photo ID, or it's against my religion, but they have to sign a sworn statement, and then they could vote provisionally. Kathleen Falk, is that okay?
Yeah, I was just always puzzled when this issue comes up, because of all the issues that our state legislators face, the problem of lacking a photo ID when you vote just isn't one of them. I always think of my wonderful grandmother who's passed away, but when she's at about 85, and for about the last 15 years of her life or so, she was in a wheelchair or a walker, you know, couldn't walk, and she was mostly deaf about the last 20 years of her life. She never had a driver's license in her life. And I'm just thinking, I think of her, and why would we make it harder for her to vote? You know, there just isn't a problem out there that needs any solution. We should be doing everything we can to encourage more people to vote.
Yeah, what about shortening the in-person absentee voting and making it more uniform around the state? Dan Kopanky, do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. As long as we have that opportunity to do that. Relative to the photo ID, I think this Jeff Stone's bill will make it easier, not harder, to come in and vote without an ID, which is good. And again, in the real world, I've had USL for 25 years, and they know me by my first name and know everything about me almost, and yet when I walk in there, I can't do a thing without an ID. You can't do anything financially without an ID. So I don't think this is out of line. Voting is a right, and it's a great privilege that we have in this country. And to have an ID to make sure that you are who you are, say you are, I just don't think that's out of bounds, as long as we do it in a manner that, again, as this bill seems to do, make it easier, not harder.
Mm-hmm. With people's busy lives, I think we should be doing things to encourage more things like voting by mail. I'm on that end of the spectrum here to try to let it easier for people to exercise their fundamental right.
Well, there's been a lot of very controversial and serious issues that we've discussed and that happened this week. But let's end with an unusual story with all the hustle and bustle of the of state budget talks. State lawmakers did include in the state budget a provision to designate the Kringle as the official state pastry. This was a move pushed by Democratic Representative Corey Mason of Racine. So let's see if we can get some disagreement on this. Kathleen Falk, is the Kringle, the should that be the state pastry?
Well, I've never seen a Kringle I didn't like.
All right, Dan Kopanky?
Yeah, you know, we used to have them when I was in the Senate. Senator Weingard would bring them in from Racine, and they're very, very good, and I have no problem with it. I probably wouldn't have any problem with any pastry, though, to be honest with you.
I do have to put a qualifier there. I'm a big cream puff fan. I mean, we are the dairy state, and I'm hoping we can get some Wisconsin milk here for the state fair, and instead of having to get all from Illinois.
I understand that the Wisconsin milk's going to be sent to Illinois to make the cream puffs.
That is reassuring.
but the cream puff was up for state dessert. Yeah. I guess that didn't make it a couple years ago. Listen, it's time for us to announce the winner and the answer to our Week in Review quiz. The winner is Mark. Congratulations, Mark. We asked, which Wisconsin politician appeared on the Colbert Report this week? It was Congressman Mark Pocan. District 2 Representative Mark Pocan sat down with Colbert on Monday night for his Better Know a District segment. The two talked about health care, bear wrestling, and even cheese curds. Let's take a listen to an excerpt.
Tell me about your district.
It's just an exceptional place. All of South Central Wisconsin is an exceptional place to live, and Madison is our capital city of the state.
I love the farmer's market in Madison.
Yep.
Go up there, fresh vegetables, cheese curds.
Yep.
Which, no offense, it's the gayest cheese. Right?
No, it's a very popular cheese.
It went on, but in any case, it's a wonderful place, the South Central Wisconsin, Kathleen Falk.
It is, and Mark's doing a great job in Congress for us.
Yeah.
And speaking of a great job, I think, Dan, we need your help with the Milwaukee Brewers. We need some of your lagers, don't you think?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we need something down there.
We do.
Sure, for sure. It's too bad. Hopefully they can turn it around, but, you know, this Ryan Braun being in the news is not helpful.
Oh, it's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask about that, so we'll leave it there because we are out of time. Thank you both so very much for being with us.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Dan Kopanky is the owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team and a former Republican state senator from La Crosse. Kathleen Falk is the former Dane County executive, was a delegate to the 2012 Democratic National Convention. Thanks to both of them for being with us for this edition of the Week in Review. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air production. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. And I hope you will join us again on Monday for our state capitol report, a special hour-long edition of the State Capitol Report with Sean Johnson, with more news on the state budget.